There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today. And Carla, welcome back to Super Athlete Radio. How are you?
Good. How are you, Chase?
I'm doing fantastic. Really excited to have you back on again. And it's a busy time of year for you.
It is, but I had so much fun our first episode. Like, as soon as you reached out to me, I couldn't say no.
That's awesome. And just based on our conversation that we had before we started recording here, could you talk a little bit about what the Rays do that kind of how they have to win?
Yeah.
In Major League Baseball?
Yeah. So to not give a lot of secrets away,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it just all goes into like player development, right? Like we really, like we always say like that's our North Star, which is kind of a pun because we have the starburst in our logo.
Mm-hmm.
But we just really care about our humans and our system. I think that's why I chose to work with the Rays. I just love the way that we not only care about our staff members and their development, but also our players. Right. We're going to put all the resources into them. We're going to help them. We're going to hire, what are we now, five, almost six mental performance coaches, process mm-hmm. and development coaches to help our players in every way that we can. And I think that's always been our model. No, like, of course, we have a lot of smart people,
mm-hmm.
You know, that do a lot of smart things like analytics and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, we're just people and we care about the human. We care about the person behind the athlete. We care about who the player is. Is he a dad? Is he a son? And we're going to try to leverage those relationships and just pour into them as much as we can for as long as we can.
And you might be biased, but you feel that the Rays do that potentially more than maybe some other clubs in Major League Baseball?
Yes. And okay, I'll throw it out there. I'm clearly a girl, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I am on the coaching staff, right? I just had a baby 11 months ago. We were just talking about her. I hit a point in my career as soon as I found out I was pregnant. I was visiting one of our low A teams. They were in a playoff spot for a championship. And I had just found out and I was like, well, that's it. There goes my career in baseball. Like I always knew like once I start a family, like I can't do this with a child as a woman and doing all these things. And a lot of important people called me. I'm talking like GMs, executives, farm directors, field coordinators. And they were like, listen, we never want you to feel like you have to choose between being a mom and being a badass mental performance coach. Or, you know, we don't want you to choose. We want to work with you. We want to help you figure this out. There's no maternity leave for field staff. Like there is policy, like, right?
Yeah.
Like there's not like anything like written, like it was kind of like a blank slate. But that moment, like that's what, like that moment in time, that's what made me really proud to be a Ray. Like that made me realize, like, yes, we talk about, we care about the people, we care about our players, we care, but I lived it and it was in such a like vulnerable time for me because it's scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have kids, like
mm-hmm.
it's a new journey. It was it's my first child. But I felt so supported and so loved throughout the way that made me be a better employee for them. Like that made me want to give my all to them. So yeah, that's just a very long way of answering. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, that's just where I was gonna ask if you feel it made you better.
100%.
I just read, there's a biography on Coach Krzyzewski, the mm-hmm. Duke college basketball coach, legendary coach. And he had something very similar happen at Duke where they lost a ton of games his first year. They lost a ton of games his second year. They were losing a ton of games his third year. And all the boosters and stuff like that were, you know, getting on the AD's ass saying, hey, this guy needs to go. And the AD called him in and gave him a new contract and said, hey, we believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be an additional 5 years. And then like once that, like Coach K felt like, okay, now I can really authentically be myself. And, you know, mm-hmm. I know there's no fear. So, they took off from there. Like, and they started winning big.
100%. Yeah. I think it's like that famous saying that like players and athletes, like they don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I actually just heard this on a podcast on my way here. It was saying before you make a withdrawal from someone, you have to make a deposit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like before you want to get something out of somebody, before you want to coach them up, before you want to put these skills into practice, you have to pour into them. You have to be there for them. You have to make them feel like they, you're cared for, or the, or you care about them, I guess. And I think, like, obviously for my line of work, like, that's always my foundational, like, step one, build a relationship. Mm-hmm. Step one, like, really build a relationship with this player, with this coach. Like, make them know that I care about them as a human, not just as a player, not just about what their stats say or whoever it is, whatever client I'm working with. Mm-hmm. But step one is, hey, I care about your success. That's step one. And then two, like, now we can pull out of you. Like, now we can get the best from you. And I lived it through, like, my just my experience as an employee, but I think it also goes with, like, players and elite performers or wherever, whatever business you're in. Like, I think as long as your people feel like they're cared for, as long as they feel like they're important and they're a key role player within your system, I think you're always going to get the best out of them. I think that's where you really get their true potential. Mm.
And then, so connection, deposits before withdrawals. Mm-hmm. And then what do you feel are some other factors that lead to, like, a high level player development culture?
Ooh, good question. Yeah. So build relationships, key, foundational. You know, they're not going to care about how much you know. They don't care about my degrees. They don't care what school I went to. They want to know, like, I care about them. That's step one. We have a relationship, right? Step two, now, once that relationship is there, now you better know your stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, now you, like, you better show them, like, hey, this is how I can help you. This is my knowledge in this. Back to, I guess I keep using my experience as with the Rays. Like, I'm a girl, never played baseball, right? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just like to address the elephant in the room right away. Like, hey, I don't know what it's like to run the bases. I don't know what it's like to stand on the mound. I don't know what it's like to be, you know, in the box and you have a runner on third and, like, there's full stadium, you're under the lights, all that pressure is on. I don't know what that's like. But I do know what it's like to have to work under pressure. Mm-hmm. I do know what it's like to have to get up even though you're not motivated. I do know what to do when your heart rate feels like it's going to fall out of your chest or it's going to come out and the butterflies are in your stomach. Like, I have the skills. I studied this. So how about you teach me about your craft? You teach me about how that feels for you. And I teach you about mine. And we can work together. We're a team. We can collaborate with one another. So step one, build that foundation, your relationships. Step two, know your stuff. Because a professional player, even just a professional in general, they can sniff out BS very quickly, and you better, like, you better back your stuff up with facts. That's just being my keys to success, and I think our keys to just player development as well.
That's really good. And then you mentioned before you came in today, you spent 2 weeks with the big leaguers in spring training and a week before in the Dominican Republic with the academy that the Rays have there. Is they're younger guys, I'm guessing, or you told me it with the in the DR. Are you approaching them a different way because they're at kind of a different stage in their life? I mean, or is it very similar?
Yeah. So just a little background, the point in time we're at right now, spring training is right around the corner, right? So spring training, big league camp just started last week. And then we crossed paths with some minor league camps going on at the same time during in Port Charlotte. Before that, I was in our academy. To answer your question, yes, your approach, I think it's going to change with, it always depends on the player, right? Mm-hmm. So taking into consideration our youngest minor leaguers, which are guys in the academy, like there's a lot of foundational learning there, right? So a lot of, I think it was one of the questions that we had talked about is what's like the one skill that we would want to teach like our youngest players, our youngest kids, our youngest athletes? Mm-hmm. To me, it's the breath. Like that's like literally my focus down there is I'm teaching kids how to breathe. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching kids how to slow your breath, slow your mind. I'm teaching them how to just slow yourself down all through the power of the breath. I think that's number one. The older we get in the system, the more that these skills, obviously the guys learned it, right? So now we can get into more, I don't want to say more advanced skills, but more like just different skills, right? More like self-awareness, more just what's your why, what's your purpose, like just more deeper skills. But to answer your question, I think the lower the level, the more foundational learning and teaching that is going on. And then the higher up that a player is, you know, all the way up to the big leagues, hopefully they got to a point where they know all these tools, they know what works for them. And now they're very, very good at being self-efficient. So they can just do it themselves. Like they don't need almost, I say we have the worst business model. We want to get them so good to the point where they don't need us anymore, right? Like we want them to do this for themselves, not to have Carla there talking you through a, you know, a breathing exercise. Like you can do that for yourself when you're on the mound. That's the end goal, but it starts with the foundational learning that happens in our in our youngest kids, which is at the academy level.
And you started to answer the question there, but so where would be a couple examples of places that would be good for them to kind of take control of their breath, whether practicing mm-hmm. or in a game or outside?
Yeah. Honestly, wherever they can get it. So here's my biggest thing with breathing and meditating. Like, personally, I love it. Mm-hmm. I do it every day. I love talking about it. I love teaching it. I get really, I don't want to say scared, but I get nervous every time I have like a meditation session with a new group. Why? Because I'm like, are they going to think it's weird? Or like, are they going to be bought in? Because I get it. Like, it's weird at first. Like mm-hmm. people, there's this just connotation over like meditation and breath work that you have to sit there and like cross your legs and be like, and just do that until you feel something, mm-hmm. right? That's what I thought about it when I first learned about meditation. Then I realized that really all meditation is, all breathing is just being fully present in the moment, in mm-hmm. the now, right? Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, like for breathing, like, yes, we can have 30-minute breathing sessions. We can do it in the classroom, but it's really whatever works for the player. Like mm-hmm. the way I go about it is I'll teach it in the classroom. Very simple. Like I'm not like players and athletes, like they don't want to sit in a classroom and learn about some. No. Some do, but yeah. some don't, right?
Yeah.
And so I just try to keep it simple, digestible. Like, hey, if you try this, you might be more calm in the box. If you're more calm in the box, you might increase your chances of getting a hit, or you might increase your chances of having better pitch selection and, you know, drawing a walk, whatever the case, right? Maybe. But let's try it. And this is like, this is the how, this is the what, this is what I think. We'll teach it, we'll introduce it in the classroom. Then I'll encourage them, like, hey, you don't have to do this for 30 minutes. You don't mm-hmm. have to do this for an hour. Just do it for 2 minutes before bed. Mm-hmm. Do 5 deep breaths. Do 5 diaphragmatic deep breaths before you go to bed. Try it. Tell me, let me know how it feels, right? And so kind of just like starting small and getting their toes wet. And then once I feel like we're in a good spot there, then we can put it into practice in the cages in between rounds, or then we can put it into practice right after sprints, right? Mm-hmm. So the guys just had their conditioning. All right, guys, 2-minute breath work. Let's all lay down. Let's hands on our bellies, like take a deep breath. But it's a progression. And mm-hmm. I think it goes with everything in sport. There's always going to be a progression to achieving whatever skill that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I love the doing it after the sprints, because mm-hmm. it's like a trigger that recovery starts yeah. now.
Yeah.
And then in your personal experience, what do you find as most beneficial with meditation?
I think it works for everybody. I think my biggest advice to people who want to get into meditating is remembering that you don't have to just like sit in a quiet room, close your eyes and say, like there is so many different forms of meditation. Mm-hmm. You just have to find the one that works for you. So for example, like people of faith, like prayer for them is a form of meditation. They're fully present. They're thinking about themselves. They're doing a scan. They're seeing how they feel. Like that is a form of meditation. Other people, like they like to, yes, close their eyes and just be fully just immersed in whatever they're feeling. Whatever it is for you, like just find that one thing and don't be intimidated with like, oh, well, that doesn't work for me because I can't do that. Like I can't just sit there and think about nothing. Like mm-hmm. I can't just sit there and just think about my breath. My mind is going. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Like do not be intimidated by it. Whatever works for you, find it, practice it. And then once you feel like you mastered that skill, try something else. Like maybe try another form of breathing. Maybe try another breathing technique and whatever exercise or box breathing, whatever it is that works for you, try it. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest key for me and like what's best for meditating is just one, like I'm saying, find what works for you. And two, practice it until you feel like you've gotten a pretty good foundation or you've gotten pretty good at it, and then test yourself and challenge yourself and try something else new. The thoughts are going to come. Mm-hmm. You're going to be distracted. Your mind is going to wander. Accept it. It's okay. If it does, bring it back to the breath. Bring it back to the now. Bring it back to where you are right in this moment. And then just see where it goes.
Yeah. Herbert Benson, he wrote this book called Relaxation Response like mm-hmm. a long time ago, like 50 years ago. It was like one of the first like scientific studies on how powerful like the relaxation mm-hmm. response is. And something that really connected with me in there is he talks about like, look at it like brushing your teeth. Like mm-hmm. when you brush your teeth, you don't usually go like, you're not judging yourself on how good you brushed. You just showed up and did it. Yeah. And he's like, he recommended looking at meditation the same way. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, it was a good way. Because again, I think it's common to have that. Am I doing this right? My mind is going crazy. Yeah.
I love that. That actually just triggered something for me going off of that. Like what I love about starting to meditate is like attaching it to something you already do. I think that's the biggest thing. Like today's day and age, everyone's busy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how are you doing? I'm busy. I'm this. Oh, I'm stressed. I'm all this stuff. Okay. We don't like what I think turns people off from meditating is, well, I don't have the time. I don't have the time to do this. I don't have the time to practice it. Like you're saying, like brushing your teeth, attach it to something you're already doing. Mm. How long do you drive for in the morning? It could be 10 minutes, it could be 5 minutes. Maybe you work from home, whatever. Like you're going downstairs to going up, whatever it is, right? Like find something in your day where you can already attach it to. So like maybe your 10 minute drive, maybe you shut off the music in the last 2-3 minutes as you're approaching your workplace and just take a couple of deep breaths and set your intentions and check in with yourself and how you're feeling. Like attach it to something that you're already doing. It's actually funny because when I first became a mom, like I couldn't find those times for self-care for me. Mm. And one of our coaches actually had suggested this to me years before that is like, hey, for my wife, what works for her is like her skincare routine. That's her me time. Mm. That's something she does every day. She washes her face. She does her skincare routine. That's her meditating time per se, right? Mm-hmm. She was attaching that to something she already did. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Like it just triggered me. Like if you don't think you have the time, if you don't think you can do it, what are you? You have 5 minutes in your day, whatever it is, attach it to something that you already do every single day. And that's when it becomes a habit.
And then really high level here, or maybe simple might be the better frame on the answer, but what do you feel is the most benefit for high performers, high level baseball players to take control of their breath, whether it's a pitcher on the mound or a batter before he steps up? What do you feel is happening that benefits them to do that?
I think I just said it, but like you slow your breath, you slow your mind. Okay. I think it all starts there. Like whatever is happening, like if you want to take control of your physical body, you have to first take control of your breath. Mm-hmm. It is such a powerful tool, not just to calm you down, but also to amp you back up. I think I said this in my first episode, right? Like a lot of times, like when you see a player or whoever it is, like in whatever sport, whenever you see them trying to calm down, like they're like it's not very intentional. It's just like, let me try this type of thing. Like I want all our players, all our elite performers, and again, we're just talking in sports setting, but this can go in anywhere, right before a presentation, it could go in the gym, whatever it is. I want you to be so good at controlling your breath because now you're controlling your physiology. Now you're controlling your physical response to stress. Now you're controlling how your muscles are feeling. Now you're controlling the oxygen that's going into your body. You start there, then you see the physical stuff, it will come, right? Like it will come, but start by controlling your breath. I think your breath and your heart rate, those are the two things that can get us out of whack. Those are the two things that can make us feel so stressed out and so anxious, and we become so like hyper aware of what our heart beating and like how we're feeling in that moment. Just take a breath and just really figure out how to practice that in that moment. And I promise like your physical body will just respond. The pitcher on the mound, he will just be able to do what he does, right? Because he was able to control his emotions, his thoughts, and his breath first.
That's amazing. Thank you for that. Was a great answer. You went more into it. And then have you seen whether it's yourself, people you've worked with, the more they do it, the faster they're able to lower their heart rate and slow their mind? Is that something that you've
seen? Yes. It's a skill, right? It's a skill. It's like any muscle. The way I teach our guys is like, your lungs are just like any other muscle in your body, right? Like the more you work out a certain muscle, the stronger that muscle is going to get, right? The more you pour into that skill, the more you pour into that exercise, the stronger it's going to get. Same thing with the skill of breathing. Same thing with our lungs, right? Like the more you practice it, the better you're going to get at it, right? To the point where you don't even have to think about it. That's just going to be your natural response to things, right? At first, like it happens to me all the time when I was just working with a client where we were working a box breathing, which is basically where you inhale for 4 seconds, you hold for 4 seconds, you exhale for 4 seconds, you hold for 4 seconds. So you're kind of going in a box, which is where it gets its name from. The first 2 days we did it, he was so bad at it. Like he felt like he was out of breath that whole 4 second hold. Like he had this panic response where he felt like he was drowning. And it's just 4 seconds. Like it's nothing crazy. But then the more we practiced it, it got to the point where we actually even a week later, I considered like taking him up to 5 seconds just to see if it would work because he was getting it and he was so calm. And even in those like holding like moments, which is where he would start to panic, like I would even have to force him to get out of it because I feel like he could have held it for so much longer. Like it's a skill that you have to practice. And eventually, like I'm saying, back to like our, we have the worst business model. I hope that eventually you're so good at it that you don't need people to teach you this. You don't need somebody to remind you how to do this or give you the techniques. You're just so self-efficient in it that you can do it yourself and you can self-regulate yourself wherever you are, in the gym, at work, or whatever is happening, whatever stress is going around you. Your natural response is just to take a really good deep breath.
Yeah, that word isn't used that often, but self-regulate, which is really the big premise of kind of what you're doing with that.
Right, self-regulation.
That's, just to set yourself up, to give yourself the most control, most power. That's awesome. I want to switch gears a little bit. You started to give your, we talked about this briefly last time, but I have some more follow-up questions on it. But you started to give yourself the title of mental training coach, and then with the staff at the Raise, you switched that over to process and development.
Yes.
Could you define why that's, did the organization made a conscious shift to change the title of that?
I think it was just, it came from so many different areas.
Okay.
Really, like, in our field, and I found this, like, just for myself, like, I'm just speaking for myself here. We wear a lot of hats, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you wear a lot of hats. We teach these guys all these skills that, like, what we just talked about with breathing, right? We teach them that. But then sometimes we also have to teach routines, right? Like, we have to teach more of like your traditional mental performance, high performance training skills and tools, right? On top of that, we also do like a lot of leadership training, right? On top of that, we also do, you know, life skills training. Like, we help our coaches, we help our players, we collaborate with our nutritionists, we collaborate with our sleep experts. Like, there's so much going on outside of like what just the common people think mental performance is. So that, I think part of like just the change of the name change also comes from like just providing more clarity of like, we do so much more than just mental performance. So before, like, what I felt beforehand when I was explaining myself as a mental performance coach, I feel like people just thought like, oh, you just work with either mental health or mental health counseling, or you just work with the mind, right? So we're only working like how to slow down our thoughts. We're only working on our self-talk. We're only working all these mental processes. Yes, we do that. Yes, I have training and degrees in that, but there's also so much more to this, to being a high performance coach. There's so much more to just the mental processes of it, right? Like, even breathing, there's a physical response. There's a mental response. There's so much more. And I just feel like the word mental kind of was putting us in a box where we feel like, I don't know, I just feel like we do so much more. That's one. And two, I think it also provide, like, just back to the process part, right? Like, oftentimes, I just ask this to our coaches. How many times do you find yourself telling a player, like, just calm down, or just trust the process, or, hey, like, relax right here, or like, hey, like, get in there and just be yourself, whatever the case, right? How many times do we say that? All the freaking time. I'm guilty of it. I say it all the time. But as the player receiving it, it's like, well, yeah, no crap. What do you think I'm trying to do? Obviously I'm trying to calm down. Like, obviously I'm trying to do this. So the word process for us is like, it's the how. Like, we always identify the what, like, calm down. Okay, well, the process, like, what's your process to calm down? Hey, like, just, you know, have good habits. Okay, what's your process behind having good habits? What is the what? I mean, what is the how? Because we often identify the what, but very, very rarely do we give our players or our people just the tools of like how to do that thing. So, yeah.
Okay, that's really good, because the focus on process over outcome is something that's become a little bit more mainstream. But again, what does that mean? Because it can mean so many different things to different people.
Yeah.
And what you said, one of the things it means there is, it's, how would you describe it?
I love analogies, right? So this is the way I'll put it. Let's say I say like, hey, I want to lose weight, right? Like, I want to lose 20 pounds. Cool. I just set the outcome. That's my outcome goal, right? Like, that's what I want to achieve. That's cool. I did it. I goal set. I just said, hey, I have goals. I'm good. Let's see what happens, right? But in doing so, I didn't give myself a direction. I didn't give myself on how I'm going to do that, right? So I can say, hey, I want to lose 20 pounds, and I'm going to do it by doing 30 minutes of cardio every single day. I am going to reduce my carb intake. I'm going to eat more protein. I am going to, you know, go on a walk. I'm going to hit my 10,000 steps. I'm going to try to do strength, whatever, like, whatever that process is, right? I'm going to do these things. Now what I'm doing is I'm taking my focus away from the result, from that outcome, like you just described. And now I'm putting it into my process, right? Mm-hmm. That's the what. It's cool. That's what we want to get to. But this is the things that I have to do every single day. This is where I have to focus to get there, right? Oftentimes it happens with all our, like, just humans in general. Like, I don't want to even just say players. Like, we set our goals and we set our outcome and we set, like, this is what we want to accomplish. But we don't really give ourselves a process of how to do that, right? So, like, in this analogy, I want to lose weight. All right, cool. There's my outcome. I kind of hope it happens. And maybe on Monday I'll run for a little bit. And then on Friday I'll, you know, get a salad instead of pasta at the restaurant. But, like, it's so inconsistent. You're not giving yourself a process of how to do it. Versus, again, this is my outcome. This is what I'm going to do every single day. That's where the key, like, that's, I think that's where the key is to achieving those outcome results, right? Step one, identify the outcome. Step two, what are you going to do to get there?
And then what happens when someone starts drifting toward the outcome again? Is it just a mental thing? Does it just switch back to focusing on the task, on the process? Or do you have any other
tips
on that?
I think as humans, like, we're outcome oriented. Most players I work with are outcome oriented. Mm-hmm. It's not their fault. It's the nature of the game, right? Like, baseball is a numbers sport. Like, you got two hits. All right, you hit 500 that game. Like, right? Like, you're constantly thinking about the result. You're constantly thinking about what you want to do. The result is awesome. Like, that's a start. But we, like, I guess just naturally, like, our mind is going to want to shift us that way. I think when you catch yourself doing that, I think you just have to remind yourself, like, okay, if this is what I want to do, how am I going to get there? Right? Like, I just had this conversation recently where, like, whatever you're doing, wherever, like, whatever your goal for the, let's say just your daily goal is, set it, but then try to center your attention to what you're going to do every single, that in every single hour, every single minute to achieve that at the end of the day. Right? So, I don't know, like I'll say it to this, like, my goal was to come here, right? Mm. Okay, so I'm going to set everything up to, like, make sure that everything is falls into place for me to be here and have this conversation, right? So I'm going to set my processes up in my day to make sure that I'm here, right? Back to the weight loss example. That's my outcome. I want to, you know, lose those 20 pounds, whatever the case is. What am I going to do every single day to make sure, like, what habits am I going to do? What routines am I going to set into place to make sure I get there? Now, is my mind going to go to the outcome every now and then? 100%, because I just stepped on the scale and it's like, dang, I only lost 1 pound. Like, what's going on? That's going to happen. This is not, no process is set in stone, right? Like, it has to be flexible. It has to be adjustable. Like, you have to be able to go back, see, like, hey, what's not working? What can I readjust? That's going to happen. But I think it's just that, I don't know. It's such a journey of, like, what's working, what's not. This is what I want. This is what I don't. But, like, just always go back to what's working, what your process is. Like, very long answer, but that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. And then a lot of people get really hard on themselves when they're not getting the outcome that they want with their process. What would you say if you noticed that with a player who is just you could tell he's being really hard on himself and shaming himself? And
I think step one is look at the goal. Like, let's look at the outcome. Is it too easy? Is it too hard? Is it just right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, I guess, like, the analogy I'll use is, like, let's say, like, I put a little, like, target right there, like the trash can, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a good basketball shooter. Your kids are, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. If I were to, like, if you told me, hey, here's a paper ball and, like, throw this paper ball, make it into the trash can, to me, that's really far. So I'm not going to get there. I'm going to feel discouraged along the way, right? Because I'm like, this is stupid. Like, I'm not good at this. It's too far away. Like, my target is too far. But if you put that trash can right here, it's like literally right here where I could see it, like, boop, I could just toss it in and it's easy, right? Well, that was too easy. That wasn't challenging enough. That wasn't pushing me. That didn't, like, require much skill. But if I put that trash can, you know, somewhere in the middle, maybe like where that table is, like, am I going to miss some? Yes. But I'm going to get close and eventually I'm going to make it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, it just goes back to that. Like, if he's discouraged, let's look at what the goal is. Is it too far away? Is it so far away that, like, you're just basically setting yourself up for failure because it's just your skill is not there yet? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, is it too easy? Did it not even challenge you? Like, did you just do it and now it's like, okay, on to the next one, and you're just not motivated because it's not pushing you? Or is it just right? Is it at a point where it's not too hard? It's realistic, right? It's realistic to the skills that you can give me, right? But it's also challenging enough where I feel like I'm being pushed, where I feel like I'm being challenged. So I think that's step one. Is that goal too high? Is it too easy? Like, do we have to adjust that outcome? And then step two is like, okay, now that we feel like the outcome is just right, going back to it, like, What do I need to do? Like, what's not working? Like, if you're discouraged, okay, well, what from the process is discouraging you? Is it, you know, maybe like you just, I don't know, you don't like this exercise that you're doing. Can we readjust this exercise? Can we re-explain it in a different way? Like, what can we adjust from this process so that that discouragement or that amotivation is not there anymore?
I really like that. I think that that's really the best way to do it, to like, you can always adjust. And personalize it. We had Sean Wendell, who was the head NBA strength and conditioning coach with Indiana Pacers for 20 years, which is an extraordinary amount of time for one team in the NBA. But like we were talking about like cold plunges, and he's like, I don't like the water. So like some players aren't going to like the water. So there's different ways to get that result. So whether that's doing that or whether it's mental training techniques or bring yourself to focus on process and outcome, you know, really find what works for you.
There's no cookie cutter approach, right? Like even just in your field, like you're not going to attack player X at the same time as like player Y. Like there's just, you can't put a cookie cutter approach to this thing. So to player development, you can't. Every player is going to be different. Some players are going to hate the water. All right. What can we do? How can we readjust? Right. Same with like all the tools that we're talking about. Like, some guys, like journaling might work really well for them because they love it. They love that self-reflection thing. Some guys hate journaling. They're just like, you know what? It's a waste of my time. I don't like doing this. I just like to think about it and just go on about my day. Cool. What other tool can I use to help increase the self-awareness? Like, that's my job, right? That's our job as the coaches in the equation, right? Like, we have to figure out what works for each one of our players. I think it's a very famous, and I just saw it on the internet like many times recently, where it's like, when a plant isn't growing or when you're not getting the result that you want from a plant, you don't just like curse the plant and be like, well, that plant is stupid. It's not doing what I need it to do. No, you start to see like, okay, is it getting enough sunlight? Am I watering it enough? Am I giving it, did I put it in the right soil? Do I maybe need to adjust it to a different temperature? Like, right, you're not blaming the plant. You're looking at the environment, right?
Yeah.
I think that's our role as coaches, is like, we don't just blame the player. We don't just blame whoever the client is. It's our job to figure out what in that environment is not working and what can I do to adjust it so that it works for that player, to help nourish him and help develop him and help him, you know, lead him to success.
Yeah, that really resonates with me, because like in my business career, that's not the wise part of me needs to come back. And when I get too attached personally to outcomes of business, like it's an attack on me, when it's not, it's just something with the environment, like you're saying with the plant. Something's not getting enough attention, or there's a blind spot there or something like that. Definitely something I'm still working on for sure.
That's
but
awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, but awesome. It's that's legit. Yes.
It is. And I think that your response, it's so valid, right? Like that's the first thing we do as human beings, is we blame ourselves. It's like, what am I not doing enough? Like I think, and I suck at it, because I don't know what it, like, I'm just going to be vulnerable. I suck at doing this, but this is what I wish I could be better at, right? It's like, how can I remember that it's not all about me? Like, it's not me, right? Like, even if I'm like talking to somebody and I don't like their response, or like just things didn't go my way, it has nothing to do with me. Like, I don't have to blame myself. Like, maybe that person just had a crappy day, or, you know, maybe it just, I'm not meant to make business with this person. I'm not meant to be here, whatever the case is. But I think our default response is always frustration. It's always, you know, what am I not doing right? Or it's always like, where did I fail? Like, I don't know. I just wish, and I need to do this for myself. Like, I wish we just extended more grace to ourselves and to others, because at the end of the day, like, if you're failing, you're trying. That's it. Like, if you're failing, that means at least you're trying, right? If you're not failing, then you're probably not doing anything. Like, you're probably not advancing. So yes, thank you for sharing that. But I think it's a very valid response to respond that way.
Yeah. And then when it comes to bringing it back to process, and this is like a universal question, because it's going to be different for each person in their craft. But what do you feel like, what's the kind of method to kind of figure out how to develop the process? How would you do that? If let's say a CEO came to you and he's like, I don't have, you know, I'm just focusing on these numbers, you know, and you ask, what's your process to do that? What do you do every day? And he's like, well, I don't really know. What would you?
I would say, like, just start taking data on yourself. Like, start tracking your days, right? Like, in this example that you just gave me, like, well, I don't know what my process is. It's like, okay, that's okay. Not many of us do. Why don't we just start by writing down what you do every single day? Like literally to a T, like, right. Let's write down your routine. Let's write down like what you're already doing, right? Because we all have a process. We just don't even know that we have a process. And so I think it might help to just like even look at it, like even be like, oh, this is what I do. And like, you have a list, right? Now, step two is, are you being like, is everything in your process, like, is it intentional? Does it need to be there, right? Like, are you doing this thing because there's true intention and purpose behind this? Or are you just doing it just because, just for the sake of doing it? Like, I think a lot of the times is why I love writing things down. And I love journaling because like, you can look at your thoughts, like you're not looking through them. You can look at what you're doing. You're not looking through them. You're like, oh, I didn't even realize that I had a process for this. I didn't even realize that this is what I'm doing already. And then now you can, like, back to the readjusting, now you can readjust certain things. Like, hey, maybe I'm frustrated because this part of my process is not really working for me. Maybe I'm tired because I'm spending way too much time on this part of the process. Like, I think it just starts by just analyzing what you're already doing. And once you have that, then you're like, okay, what from this can I readjust?
I think that's a great start.
Yeah.
And then shifting gears a little bit, how many women mental training coaches, process development, what percentage do you feel like that is in MLB?
I am ashamed to say that I am horrible at math.
Okay.
So I can't give percentages. Sure. But I will say, look, so in my example right now in my department, I am the only woman there.
Okay.
I'm the only mom there too. In just like as a field staff, and I'm only talking about my organization, I am the only field staff who has had a baby. So for me, like, I'm whatever the percentage is or whatever, like, the rate is, it's very limited. Very, very, very low. Yes.
And then do you feel like that's changing, or do you feel like it's kind of stuck in a circle?
It's changing. It is changing. I am so proud to say. So back when I first got hired, it's so funny. Like, we were talking about the academy. I was actually I was the first female to walk through those academy doors in Dominican Republic. And after I got hired, our VP at the time, he was like, we have to make her a bathroom. Like, there's no bathroom there. And so they're amazing. But they literally built, like, within like a week, they built a whole bathroom just for us to have the girls to have a bathroom. That's where it started. Back in our complex in Port Charlotte, they had just built a brand new locker room. It was beautiful, gorgeous, brand new building, everything. And there were so many lockers in there, and they were all empty. Like, they didn't have nameplates on them, and only three of them did. Now, when I was just at camp last week, I walked in there, and we had to add lockers. Like, there wasn't enough. Like, we had to add, I think off the top of my head, like, four lockers, like, smack in the middle of the locker room because there was not enough. And some women are sharing lockers. And this was, like, five seasons in the making. So it is definitely changing. It's so awesome to see. But yeah, we've come a very long way from not having somewhere to pee to now having state-of-the-art locker rooms for our women in sports.
And then do you still have to deal with stuff in terms of interactions with, you know, players or management that this kind of come? You feel an energy of this coming up and you having to overcome?
Yes. I think it comes not even just in – like in my field, I think it's for any woman out there that is trying to fit in a system that maybe wasn't built for her to be in it, right? And that's something that I constantly feel for myself is like, I'm trying to fit in a system that was never originated, like was never built for me to be in it in the first place. Like back when the system was built, like they never thought that a woman would be walking around here, right? And so with that comes a lot of challenges, and with that comes a lot of being mad and being frustrated and being sad, and all the emotions come. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And every time women call me and they're like, what is it like to work in sports? Or what is it like to work in a male dominated sport? Like it sucks sometimes. It sucks a lot of times, right? Mm-hmm. Like you constantly have to deal with things that your male coworker does not have to, right? Like I'll give you examples. Like our male coworkers, they just get into the locker, grab shorts, throw on a t-shirt, put on shorts, go outside to the field. For me, I'm like, are these shorts too short? Are they too long? Is somebody going to think something of it because I'm wearing shorts? Should I wear a long sleeve? You know what? I'm just going to wear my joggers today. Right? It's just like these extra little like mental loads that we have to deal with that are our guys don't have to, right? And on top of that, you have to be elite at your job. Like, on top of all of that stuff going on and all those thoughts going on and all, like, you know, the BS that you might have to deal with, you also have to be elite at what you do. It's tough. And I tip my cap to every woman doing it. I don't have the perfect formula, but I will be the first to say that I've almost given up many, many times, and I'm so happy I did it.
And then why did you feel like you've almost given, like, what was the cause of that, the mental load?
I think for me, like, personally, because I'm a mom now, I'm like, mm-hmm. why am I even dealing with this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I could just be at home holding my baby. Like, why am I even dealing with these BS? What brought me back to, like, not giving up is realizing that I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. And, well, two things. One, something about me, I get really bad FOMO with everything. I do. And so I remember sitting, it sounds so ridiculous because it was such
sounds a... Sounds like a good kind of FOMO.
Right? Yeah. It is. Like, yeah. It's a good motivation. But it sounds so ridiculous because it was such a, like, vulnerable moment where I was like, I'm so dumb. Why am I thinking this? But I remember thinking, like, I was, like, at, like, my in the middle of, like, my contract was about to be up, so I didn't know if I was going to go back to sports or not. Like, I was just really figuring it out this past coming off season. And I was sitting there, and I was like, this is so dumb. Why am I thinking of this? But I was like, you know, if I gave up right now, yes, maybe I would be spending more time with my daughter. Yes, like, maybe I'll be happy for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. But then, like, 5 years from now, there's going to be another woman in my position that broke through all the barriers, that set all these processes, that set all these policies, and just took the bull by their horns. And I am going to get the worst FOMO, because that could have been me. Like, that could, like, I could have been the person that made that change. That was one. And two, back to what I just mentioned, I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I would do my daughter such a disservice if I just, you know, threw in the towel and was like, well, you know what? It's too hard. So let's just give up and try something else. Like, what if she wants to work in a mill? I don't know what she wants to do. She's 11 months old. She got mad because she couldn't eat toothpaste this morning. Mm-hmm. But, like, what if she does want to? And I just didn't pave that way for her. And not just for her, but, like, for every other girl that's coming behind me, for every other woman that's studying to, you know, work in a male-dominated industry right now. Like, that's who I'm doing it for. And I think that's my biggest motivator right now.
That's amazing. I think it's the right decision. I think it's really inspiring. Because she's gonna look at, you're her biggest model. So
I hope so. My husband just texted me on my way here. He was like, make our daughter proud. And it's like, just that hit me. It's like, yeah, like, this is what I want. This is who I'm doing it for.
That's awesome. And then what are some of the tools of your craft that you teach that you have to use on yourself, like, when it comes to this stuff? Whether it's maybe just a specific example of, like, all the additional decisions that you need to make?
A lot. a lot. My gosh. Okay. I'm Latina. Okay. So my Latinas will appreciate this. I react so emotionally so quickly, like so quickly. And I think it's also being, I don't want to label things, but, like, it's also, like, part of me, like, as a girl too. Like, I'm a very emotional being. But that's one of the biggest tools I had to work through, because, like, I always say this, like, we have to practice what we preach, right? Like, how dare I tell a player who just struck out for the fourth time in the same game to not smash that bat and to not throw that helmet, and that he's being a bad teammate, when if somebody made a comment and it triggered me, I'm almost having the same response, but in a different way, obviously. Like, if I'm being emotional, like, how dare I not practice what I preach? And I think that's what, like, really, like, made me settle in and be like, okay, like, emotional regulation, step one. Mm-hmm. Step two, I think it's more of a phrase, is like, don't make permanent decisions based on temporary emotions. That's something that I had to, like, a tool that I had to teach myself, is just, like, remembering that what I'm feeling in this moment, like, don't make a decision based off of this. Like, let's take a deep breath. Let's get our heart rate down. Let's calm down. Let's reframe. Let's look at, like, you know, change the perspective of how we're looking at the situation, and then revisit this decision. And then the last one that is more recent for me is remembering, and again, I'm not good at this, I'm practicing it, remembering that the quality of my life is based on the quality of my emotions. Right? Oh man, I heard that and I was like, that's so true. Like, the quality of my life, like, the quality of, like, my days are based on how I'm reacting to things and where my attention is going and where my focus is going. Am I going to spend all day being pissed off at this one comment and throwing my day away? Or am I going to choose to just be like, you know what? I'm going to let it go and I'm going to try to enjoy the rest of my day. All things that I teach our players, all things that I have to do for myself every single day.
Yeah, that's awesome. It makes me think of Epictetus. Just this is Stoic. Mm-hmm.
That was great pronunciation. I would have butchered it.
Yeah.
I would never said it.
I'm not into Stoicism that much. I think, I think some of the stuff's pretty cool. But he's a Stoic I like. He was the former slave who became like this badass teacher. But one of his things he was talking about is that you wouldn't let someone come into your house and steal your shit, right? So why would you let someone get into your head and take the time and attention and that? And I think that's a pretty good analogy.
Yes, that's amazing. It triggered, we do these things called mental minutes. Where like it's right before stretch, we get the guys on the line, like before they're about to go do their thing. And we just 60 seconds of something, like something quick, something to flip the switch. It's a story. Sometimes it's a quote, sometimes whatever it is, just quick mental minute. And back to it, I'm really bad at math, so I'm going to butcher the number. But I basically like told the guys, like, let's say, like, I don't know, how many seconds do we have in our day? Do we know that math? Like,
I think it's 14. No, that's minutes. 86,400.
There it is. That's the perfect number. So I'm like, okay, let's say right now, guys, like I come out to every single one of you and I give you $86,400 right now. You can deposit in your bank. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the catch. You have to spend it all. So at the end, at midnight, that's going to reset. And whatever money you didn't use, like it's gone. You can't use it anymore, right? And so like, what would you do with that money? So some guys are like, oh, well, you know, I would pay off my loans and I would do this, or I would go buy a car and I would do whatever, like, but you have to spend it all, right? Now, let's say somebody comes, right? That's awesome. Like you just were very productive with what you're going to do. Let's say somebody comes and steals $10. Mm-hmm. You just got $86,400, right? Somebody comes and steals 10 bucks from you. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be so angry, so, so angry that you're going to decide to just throw away the rest of the money, not even deposit it in the bank because you're just so mad about it that you're just going to throw it all away? No, right? It's just 10 bucks. You still have $86,390 left, right? We do the same thing with our days. Mm. We have 86,400 seconds in our days. Why would we let 10 seconds of it dictate the rest of our day, dictate the rest of that? Like that saying, like time is money, like your seconds are money. Mm-hmm. So if you have a bad 10 seconds, like you're saying, like if you have a bad 10 seconds, are you really going to let that dictate the rest of your day? Like time is so valuable. Like why are we letting that throw everything else away?
And that's where emotional regulation comes in. And then do you feel like is it a cue or something? Mm-hmm. Is a good way to bring people back? Is that something that you recommend or? Yeah. Okay.
I love that. I like it. Yes. You are your little process and development coach over here at Super Athlete. Yes, I love cues. I love physical cues. I love auditory, like whatever it works. So a physical cue, it depends on the person, right? So a physical cue could be like if we're talking in the baseball context, like let's say you just struck out. Okay. That act of you like unbuckling your gloves, taking it off, like that is your physical cue of like, let it go. We're taking it off.
Oh, that's great.
Right. And like, you're taking your helmet off. We're just taking that. You don't even have to strike. Maybe you just hit a home run. Like, and you just, you know, went around the bases. Like, it's still like, whatever it is, good or bad, right? Like, that physical cue of you taking that off, we're leaving it in the past. Now I'm putting my hat on. That's my cue to go on defense. Now I got to flip the switch, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a physical cue. A visual cue would be more like of a visual reset, right? So, like, hey, like I'm too amped up right now. I'm being too emotional right now. Like, let me just stare at one thing and like just describe that one thing, right? So like, I don't know, I've used this silly example. Like there's a rock on the floor. I'm like, okay, just stare at that rock. Like describe it to me. Like what is going on? Like really just like think about it, right? And then that is just literally forcing your brain to just like forget about everything else and just like we're rewiring our attention. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, auditory cues, like when you listen, like a song that you might like, or maybe there's a quote that makes you snap out of it. But there's so many different cues that you can use. You just have to find which one works for you.
Yeah. I want to do that more. I think that's really good.
It's easier said than done, I will say. Yes.
Cause, one of the things I do that helps me sleep, I'm proud cause there's all the sleep stuff is like, we have an app. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm trying to bring something to the table in terms of how we can help our clients improve their sleep. That's not mm-hmm. talked about a million times over, like dark out curtains and stay yeah. away from electronics a couple hours. But one of the things that works for me is there's a certain breath sequence that I do only when I'm trying to go to sleep.
Okay.
So it's like a trigger on my subconscious that like now it's time to go to sleep. But, so just hearing you say that, it makes me think about how I could apply that just in other areas, more cues, because it's powerful. I love the glove.
Yeah.
Like it's done. Everything. Next.
It's yeah. done. What it's done. It's, like I'm using baseball because that's just what I work with, but I think it's applicable pretty much in any sport. It's just like whatever it is, like just take it off. Take it off physically. Let's move on. But back to your sleep thing. That's awesome. I actually want to ask you, like, what do you find is like the easiest, back to process, the easiest process that you can set into place to get better sleep? Asking for my mom self.
Easiest, I would say, like overall, like high level would be to kind of tone everything down. So what I mean by that is like electronics, lights, like intensity of conversations. I know like I have a hard time like shutting off. And a lot of people do. Yeah. But like to be able to not have like specific work conversations before bed. So like overall, it's like toning down is a huge one. And then, you know, just the standard stuff, a dark room.
Yeah. Sun machine, blue light glasses.
Yeah. The biggest one that I don't do as consistently as like in terms of it has the biggest impact on like my sleep scores. So it's like my Oura Ring. Is like not eating like 3 hours before bed. Like yes. that one's huge. Like I'm good of like hour and a half or something, but
yeah.
3 hours, it's like huge. Like yeah. You either rest or you digest or something like that. It's like, yeah.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So that's a huge one. And then I do the breath thing. And that's helpful. And it's helpful when, I wake up in the night yes. in terms of getting back to bed.
I was just going to say like, also like I love doing breath work as soon as my eyes open. But what you just said, like it's almost like coming up with a wind down routine, right? Like we're humans, we're creatures of habit, we're creatures of routine. Like it's almost like are you resetting ourselves up with a process or a pre-bed, like pre-game routine, a pre-sleep routine, right? A wind down routine.
I think
I'm going to put into practice, like if I'm eating, okay, what time am I going to eat, at what time am I going to cook dinner, and that's just kind of like setting up my day. And now I have a pretty awesome sleep routine where hopefully my body just responds to it.
Yeah. And then as we wrap up here, I'd love to get in your experience working with, whether it's just been the best of the best of the guys in the MLB or what you've seen with like the best players in the academies or on the minor leaguers. Mm-hmm. Is there anything specific in terms of their habits and or the way they process things that you feel separates them from the rest that you see that's like a common theme? So we had, he's now the director of sports science for the University of Miami here a couple weeks ago, Eric Rennigan. And he came from the NHL and he was on three different teams in the NHL for like, I think 15 years. And he had Hall of Famers on each team. And I asked him if there was anything consistent with all those guys on different teams. And he said that they never got too up and they never got too down. So like no matter what happened, it was just back to work consistently. Have you noticed anything specifically with kind of the best compared to the very good with the players that you've seen?
Yes. I think it just goes back to like that self-regulation piece. Like the elite of the elite, they are really good at self-regulating. They're really good at, like we were saying, like not ramping yourself to like up too much or not slowing yourself down too much, right? Like just finding that level for you. I don't want to repeat what he said, so I'm going to like attack it from another angle. And that's something that I've noticed recently is that our most elite players that I've worked with in and outside of baseball, they always have a plan. They always have intention behind everything that they're doing. Right. And I think that like it even applies for me as like in my job. Right. Like it's so easy to like just walk to the cages just because that's just where everybody's going or that's what's on the schedule or like maybe just going to the gym just to like stand there and observe the guys. But is there really intention behind that? Like, do I have a purpose for being there? Like, am I going to make that productive? And that's where I find like the flip of a switch for players, right? Like it happened to me years ago. I was working with a player and I sat next to him and I was like, hey, like, what's the goal for the day? And he sarcastically was like, oh, to just hit the ball. We're in batting practice. And I was like, well, no shit. Like, duh, that's obvious. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what's your goal? And he's like, well, to grab the bat and hit the ball with it. And I'm like, okay, well, is that really getting you better? Like, is that like, are you getting better with having that mindset versus our most elite players? Like, I think I even just saw a video of Mike Trout, like in his batting practice, he was giving himself constant feedback. Most elite players, like they have a purpose behind every swing. They have a purpose behind every exercise. They have a purpose behind everything that they do. Like there's intention behind it. So to me, that's what's really, really powerful. And that's where I've seen like mark the difference.
That is awesome. That's a great answer to dovetail with what Eric said. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's a great way to end, Carla. Thank you for coming on. You're our first two-time guest on Super Athlete Radio.
It's an honor.
Yeah. Awesome. And this was amazing. And I just think what you're doing is you're a true trailblazer. Thank you. God bless you in your journey. And then best place for people to connect with you.
As always, my Instagram, that's where I'm most active. So that's at Carla Sophie, S-O-F-I-I. But yeah, no, back to it. Like, I love this. This is the reason why I was like, oh, I have 24 hours at home. I have to go make this work. So thank you for having me. I love what you guys are doing as well. So this is awesome. It's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chase.